Hello, my name is Dominic Yoon, and you are listening to a special program on Czech Independence Day. I'm joined in the studio by Professor Jan Rychlík, noted historian. Today we're going to have a discussion not about the origins of Czech Independence Day or anything like that, but we're going to look at the influence of foreigners in the Czech lands and the various foreign people, if it could be described that way, that have lived in the Czech territory, minorities, ethnic groups, and so forth. So, Professor Rychlík, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us today. So if we go back to the sort of origins of the Czech lands, the Slav people and so forth, so who exactly are the sort of homogeneous or the ethnic original Czechs?
Well, the Czechs are Western Slavs. It means they are part of the Slavonic tribes, which migrated to the Central Europe. We don't know exactly when, but there were several waves in the 4th and 5th century Anno Domini. They didn't come, of course, to the empty space. Here were Teutonic tribes. We don't know exactly what happened to them. Probably we may expect that they were partly assimilated, they were partly expelled, and they were partly exterminated, means killed, which was normal on those days. We cannot, of course, apply standards of the 21st century to the early Middle Ages. And then from 13th century, mainly in the 13th century and later also in 16th, 17th century, there was a new migration coming from the neighboring German states, Saxony, Bavaria. These people colonized the borderlands and, of course, also in the hinterland, in big cities, royal cities usually, were the burghers who were of the German origin. But in the Middle Ages, of course, people didn't care about their ethnic origin. Much more important was the estate affiliation and religious affiliation. So up to the 19th century, generally, we can say that there were no conflicts between them. Only when modern nationalism arrived at the turn of the 18th and the 19th century, started the conflicts between Germans and Czechs, because both were now affiliated not to the land, but to their language and ethnic origin. But we may say that up to the 20th century, they were living side by side, not together, but rather separately. But of course, there were mutual influences. Also, there was a considerable Jewish minority here, because the Jews had a special status. They were considered to be the subjects of the royal chamber, which meant that on one hand, they were protected by the state, by the monarch.
Most spoke German, right? Most Jews spoke German.
Well, yes, mainly from the 18th century on. But in the second half of the 19th century, there was also a considerable group of the so-called Czechojide, Czech Jews, who used Czech. We have several famous Czech writers who were of Jewish origins, and we do not consider them to be Jewish writers, but Czech writers like Karel Poláček or František Langer. But I must say that, in fact, despite this, we cannot say that the Czech lands would be multicultural in the present sense, as we understand it today, because these communities had contacts, but they lived, as I said, separately. And, of course, after the expulsion of Sudeten Germans after the Second World War, and due to the extermination of the Jews during the Nazi occupation, during the Second World War, today we may say that the state is relatively homogeneous.
Okay, and on that point, earlier this week I spoke to Jan Hartl of the STEM Agency, which is a polling agency which surveys Czech opinion, and I asked him on this precise question of multiculturalism in the Czech lands. This was his response.
We have to take into account the simple fact that Czechoslovakia and now the Czech Republic used to be a multi-ethnic, multinational country. Even centuries ago, it was a crossroad of various cultures.
European cultures, though, right?
European
cultures. White, European, Christian cultures.
Yeah. But it was normal to meet citizens, and we should remind the fact that one-third of the population were Germans before the war, that the Jewish minority overwhelmingly spoke German in this country. And since we expelled the German minority out of the country, we are very rare example of a ethnically homogeneous country. So people are not used to diversity. Another thing to be reminded is that during the communist decades, we were closed here, more or less as in a prison. People could not move, could not travel. Whenever you met a foreigner, it was, well, you were suspected that you are dealing with a possible enemy. People did not know foreign languages.
So this idea that the Czechs were physically surrounded by a band of Germans, and then in the early 30s, people like Konrad Heinlein, the Sudeten German sort of nationalist leader, started saying, issuing grievances, we're not being treated fairly, you Czechs are oppressing us, and so on and so forth. So was there any, obviously, I suppose every grievance has some degree of truth. So was there, were the Czechs being superior towards their German minority?
To a certain level, yes, certainly. But I wouldn't say that this was the main reason. Simply from the point of view of the Germans, it was natural. When Czechoslovakia came to being, they said, well, why should we live in the country dominated by the Czechs when we have the right to our own state or to our own right to self-determination? And so we as Germans naturally would like to be part of Germany. And it was not only the case of the Nazi Germans. Even the Social Democrats said, of course, we oppose Hitler, but the sole fact that we, Sudeten Germans, should live together with our kinsmen in Germany, we have no objections against it. It's okay. So I don't think that the situation would change much if the Czechoslovak government gave to the Germans more concessions. Maybe it wouldn't be so harsh, but definitively in the concrete situation in 1938, when this minority has a support from the German Reich, which Czechoslovakia, a small country, couldn't oppose, the result would be the same anyway. Another thing is, after the war, whether it was necessary to expel these almost 3 million people. I am not sure about that, because I always give an example. The situation in Slovakia with the Hungarian minority was very similar. It was even more complicated, because the Sudeten Germans never lived in German state. They lived in Austria. But they were also, before 1918, they were also separated from Germany. But Hungarians in southern Slovakia lived in Hungary and now were separated from the Hungarian state. Also, of course, naturally, they asked to be annexed to Hungary, which on 2nd of November 1938 happened after the first Vienna arbitrary award. But after the war, despite all those problems, they remained in Czechoslovakia because the big powers didn't agree for their forcible transfer to Hungary. And today, the situation may not be ideal, but they now simply are more or less loyal citizens to the Slovak Republic. So I think that there was a chance after the war, in the new situation, that the German minority would accept the state. In the 30s, such option was not very likely.
You have the Czech people who are surrounded, basically, and that big country that surrounded them turned on them. And if to that we also add the fact that the Czechs were never a colonial power, they never had colonies. So those two things, have they affected the Czech psyche to a degree where they view foreign people with greater suspicion, potential enemies?
I think that the main problem is really what Mr. Hartl said, is that the country was more or less closed, relatively closed, of course. It doesn't mean that there was a Chinese wall, that there were no foreigners or no foreign tourists. But we were separated from the rest of Europe, and a common citizen very rarely faced a foreigner except a tourist, you know, who usually was wealthy and was here for a short time, or foreign students, for instance. But here were no communities of the ethnically foreign people, and especially not the communities of the people who would be culturally totally different. And the second thing is that for the Czechs, most of them are afraid of Islam. This is an atheist country. This is the most atheist country, if not in the world, then certainly in Europe. More than half of the population of this country says openly that there is no God. And they are afraid of the people who believe that there is Allah, and that after the death, if you die in the struggle for the fight, you will go to the heaven. And this is the threat from something unknown, I would call it like that.
And it's getting stronger, right? Because this is something I asked Jan Hartl as well, how Czech perceptions have changed over recent years. And he surprisingly said that in the last 15 years, it's actually gotten worse.
When we look through the data, we can see that during the last 10 years, there's a decreasing number of people who would say that it's the natural right of the foreigners to get Czech citizenship. It's not any dramatic shift, but it's a steady decline of support of integrating foreigners in the country. And this is also a problem of our European or pro-European attitude. There were years and years until 2010 when the population supported European Union very strongly by 65%. In the 90s, the support for European Union was considerably higher than the support to NATO. But recently, as a result of provincialism of our politics, and it was easy to blame European Union for everything, so the support of European Union now is about 37%. It's quite a dramatic shift. There were times 15 years ago when the support of adopting euro was 51-52%. Now it's something around 20%. So it means that the Czechs, during our period of being members of European Union, consider European Union less and less important and less acceptable.
Is that not due to the recent world economic crisis, that a country withdraws into itself a bit more?
Yeah, sure. It's a result of the response to economic crisis. But the same applies to what we said about the refugees, that realizing that the situation is much more complicated, that the European Union would not be a simple tube through which you get more money into the country, that there are many problems, including refugees, which European Union itself is not able to cope with. At the present, you realize that there's a diversity of opinions inside the European Union, that their ability to a strong response and effective action is relatively limited. In such a situation, you are in a difficult position. And if at the same time local politicians blame European Union for many problems in our country, which is not the result of European Union, but the result of their own activities, it's very easy. And so they just to channel the attentions of the people towards the outside world, towards the foreigners, towards the European Union, towards the refugees, and want to capitalize on that and get more support in local elections.
So, Professor Rychlík, how would you sum up Czech attitudes towards foreigners?
The attitude to the foreigners is different depending on the type of foreigners. The Czechs generally have nothing against the Ukrainians. For instance, we have many Ukrainian guest workers. They speak the similar language. They don't manifest their orthodox religion. And there are no problems with them. What are people afraid? Are the people who are, as I said, culturally different? Because here was nothing like that, never before. But I must agree with Mr. Haas that unfortunately in the last 10, 15 years, the xenophobia is increasing step by step. And I'm afraid it will increase even more, the continuing influx of refugees from Syria and Africa.
So the refugee problem is increasing xenophobia. People are getting more afraid.
Definitely. And many people simply lost the confidence to the West and especially to the European Union and the United States of America, particularly saying that who needs democracy in Syria or Afghanistan? We don't need democracy or human rights in this country. We need order. And those dictators who were there before were much better because they kept these people living there, while this is a mess which simply Europe and especially a small Czech Republic cannot stand. Especially the decision of European Union to redistribute all those refugees had a very bad impact, in fact, not only on the populations, but practically on all political parties from the left to the right, because they say, what can we do with these people? They will not stay here anyway, and we have no way how to keep them here, and it will mean another problems, And another problem is, as I said, that the common citizens are afraid that this may bring, you know, Islam fundamentalism, Sharia, right?
So tell me, in the 1960s, during the Vietnam War, the communist government here brought in a large number of refugees from Vietnam. How did Czechs react to that? That must have been completely alien suddenly, alien faces are suddenly living among us. Were there any problems in those days?
What I remember, in the early 70s, here were many Vietnamese students and some Vietnamese who were sent to factories to become skilled workers and then return back. And most of them who studied here after the fall of communism remained here. And I must say that the local population has no problems with them. They usually own these small shops selling vegetable and foods, you know, 24 hours a day. But I think this is because they are here already 30, 40 years and the people are accustomed to them. You know, they connect them with a certain place in the society. So, yes, they are culturally definitively different, but still behaving in the way which the local society consider to be acceptable.
I asked Jan Hartl earlier this week exactly the same question, and this was his response.
It was a situation when people were puzzled what this is going to bring about, and the survey data show that the attitude towards Vietnamese people is turning to be more and more positive. And the main explanation is that they are different, okay, but they are very laborious, they work hard, they try to adopt themselves into our society. They are succeeding relatively well. The children already have their schoolmates of Vietnamese origin at school, and they see that it's working. The major problem with the Czech population is that when you have a minority which is not willing to adapt to usual culture standard of the society.
That's the Roma. Czechs are afraid of? Or the Roma?
The Roma issue, which is very difficult to solve because it's not an ethnic or the language problem, but it's more or less a social issue, and the issue is of misusing the system of social benefits. And now, with the present influx of refugees, it's not the major problem, is not with the difference, the fact that the people are different, but the main threat they feel is from Islam.
They it's are not more, just brown, more brown people who look like Roma?
No, it's not a serious problem. The serious problem to people is that the refugees will bring about more influence of Islam in the country, and it's perceived as a clear evil by a majority of people.
I did an interview in a kebab shop in Prague some months ago with an Algerian man who runs it, and he told me he's never had any problems whatsoever from any Czechs of being racist towards him. So this perception, perhaps, that Czechs are xenophobic and racist is one side perhaps of the coin, but there's also another side whereby people are accepting, or people are, as you mentioned, this hard work, the Vietnamese thing. That's surely something that the Islamic community would be the same, right? They're not known for being sponges.
Well, of course, I know many people selling here kebabs or having, you know, halal meat, halal food. The problem is that these people are, you know, accustomed to local customs. Here, simply, it's out of question that somebody in factory would say, I, as a Muslim, I must pray five times daily. Let's interrupt now the work, I will pray. He will be fired immediately. Because the owner would say, simply, here, obey my rules and not your rules. If you do it privately at home, if you try, you know, to be familiar with the local customs, then there are no problems. But these people, being now here, are few. But if we have, you know, thousands and thousands of these people, it probably will be different. Because not everybody can come here and sell kebab in the shop.
Tell me about the history of Roma in this country. How long have they been here? Have they always been viewed with a negative tar of being sort of thieves and lazy and so on?
Well, first of all, the Romas which were here, the so-called old Romas, were totally exterminated in the Second World War. Only about 800 or 1,000 people survived. Those Romas who are here now are the second, third, or maybe even already fourth generation of the Slovak Romas who came after the war. Because in Slovakia, which was not occupied, it was a puppet state, the Romas were not exterminated. And it's a social problem, I think, which certainly will not be solved in this generation, because there is something like a magic circle deadlock. They are uneducated, which means that they will not open any jobs, because they have no jobs, you know, their children are again uneducated, and they must live on social benefits, because they are unable to get a job, and there is no way out. And if somebody obtains education, and there are, I know people from the strata, they try to distance from the Roma community. So I think that the system with Romas cannot change unless they have their own intelligentsia, which is consciousness, and strong enough to say, you are Roma, you must be proud of it, but it means also that you will not steal, you will not live on unemployment benefit, you will send your kids to the school.
Is there not a slightly...
If not, we will not protect you.
Is there not a slightly paternalistic sort of superior attitude from the white population towards the Roma, saying, you know, white waving their fingers at them, as in you need to learn something?
Certainly, yeah. But also, I do not hide, we must admit, that there is a lot of prejudice against Romas. And even if there is a job, and if they are skilled, very often they will not obtain it, because they are Romas, and it's, you can't do anything about it, because you cannot prove it. They will just tell you that it's already occupied, that 5 minutes before you someone came and, sorry. They cannot rent apartments, because the owner of the house said, I do not want any Romas here, because if I have Romas here, I cannot rent another apartment. And the whole, you know, house then is losing value. And if I have, you know, here Romas, I cannot sell it, because no one will buy it. So they are living in ghettos, separated from the rest of the people. And in the ghettos, very often, there is no jobs, except, you know, very unqualified. Or, of course, they are involved in various criminal activities, like trafficking drugs.
And after the expulsion of the Germans from the Sudetenlands, those areas were repopulated by the communist government, sometimes by sending Roma people to these areas, right, to areas that were, like, totally empty.
First of all, the depopulation of these areas to a great level remained unpopulated till nowadays for two reasons. Because people coming from the lowland inside, they came to the totally different conditions. Long winters, a lot of snow, very bad conditions for agriculture. And they couldn't live there. Half of the villages which existed before the war disappeared. The second thing is that at the Bavarian border, during the communist regime, there was a so-called border zone where the civil population was not allowed to live. And some villages were destroyed. But it's true that not only Romas, for instance, the Hungarians from southern Slovakia were also sent there, and the people who, Czechs and Slovaks, who were repatriated from Bulgaria, Romania, were sent there. Some of them remained, some of them not. But definitely, these people didn't have, and I think that even today do not have, contact. You know, they do not consider this land and these villages to be theirs. They have dreams about the places they came from. People who were transferred there from southern Slovakia, who remained. Right. Or the Slovaks. There are Slovak villages. Slovaks obtained land also there. And they never find simply the spiritual link with this place.
Okay, let me ask you a final question, just about a sort of simple compassion. Visiting Germany, say like a city like Dresden recently, I noticed there were big signs on various flats saying refugees welcome. In the center of the city, someone had set up like a booth, you know, if you're a refugee, come here and we'll help you. It is a sort of extreme, you might say, outpouring of compassion. But nonetheless, it does exist. While obviously other Germans might say, you know, stop, or there may be a debate now happening about it going too far. But nonetheless, there was this outpouring of compassion, whereas in the Czech Republic, that there is, one might say, more a case of cynicism and fear and so on. And sometimes you hear some Czechs waving their heads saying, I'm ashamed to be Czech.
You know, I'm One of those, maybe you heard about it, we scientists signed a petition and memorandum against xenophobia. It was in August this year.
In reaction to
increasing xenophobia and some, you know, as a reaction also to some politicians who said that simply the Czech Republic should, because we are afraid that many political parties, both on the left and on the right, will try to get popularity on this problem. But it's true that simply one must be, that one sometimes is ashamed for what is happening here, especially with the fact that people who crossed the border illegally were sent to the detention camps for 40 days, despite that they didn't commit any crime. Illegal border crossing is not a crime. It was a crime under the communist regime, but this paragraph was crossed out from the penal code in December 1989. Why the people react? I think that it's, as I explained, because they are afraid of something which is completely new for them, but which I say we cannot stop. No one can, and we cannot either, because, you know, the country of 10 million people cannot solve the problems in the Middle East and in Afghanistan and in Africa, in Libya or Somalia. The only thing what we scientists and academicians can do is education to the people, to try to people to educate that simply not every Muslim must be a terrorist, that there are many groups of Muslims, and most of them simply certainly do not want to live in caliphate because they are quite content in Great Britain under the rule of Her Majesty the Queen, or in France or in Germany. Whether we will succeed or not, I don't know.